If we were living a few thousand years ago instead of now, we might have had a very different take on the severe weather that we've been having. With the flooding and the heavy rain and even the threat of a hurricane, if we were living thousands of years ago, we might at some point have asked the question, why is God punishing us? What have we done wrong to deserve this? And how do we appease God? We may think that there's something that we need to adjust because these things are happening to us. Well, this is the way people thought thousands of years ago, and some people still think this way today. Really, what this is about is the mythic God, the idea of God in the sky, if you will, the idea that up above us in heaven is an old man with a beard. I don't know what it is with the beard, but anyway, he has a beard. And he's up there keeping track of everything. And every once in a while, he supernaturally intervenes in the human condition, typically to either punish us if we've been bad or reward us if we've been good. And the way we usually get rewarded is through answered prayer. So this is the idea of the mythic God. It's a very old concept that there are still some vestiges of today. Now, I know that there are times when we often lapse into that kind of thinking. There may be a few of us who were praying that God would steer Hurricane Joaquin out to sea. We may pray that our friends are healed. We may pray that God finds us a job and helps to boost our income. So we still lapse back into that every once in a while. But the fact is that that concept of God, the mythic God, God in the sky, that concept is dying. And that is a monumental shift in our society. Because our belief in God is not just a little theological detail. Our concept of God determines how we think about ourselves, how we think about other people, how we relate to one another, and even how we live our lives. It's very basic to our worldview and very reflective of our level of consciousness. So there's a wonderful book, the book of the week. There's a wonderful book called The Death of the Mythic God. It's very powerful. It's very provocative. It's by an author named Jim Marion, and the subtitle is The Rise of Evolutionary Spirituality. Well, Jim Marion is not a Unity author. He actually grew up, he's considered to be a contemporary mystic who grew up in the more traditional Christian spiritual path, studied divinity, studied the priesthood, and eventually got a law degree. But he has some very new thought compatible ideas, let's just say. So one of the things that he says in this book is that there used to be a time when this mythic concept of God was widespread, right? That's just kind of how people thought way back in the day. But increasingly in today's world, that concept is much more narrowly held. And I'm talking now about people who really focus and believe in this concept of God. He says that it's now more narrowly held by fundamentalists. And by fundamentalists, I mean in all religions, not just one. The fundamentalists are at that mythic level of consciousness which is characterized by conformity, by law and order, by rules and roles, and by a certain ethnocentrism. Ethnocentrism being that our way is the one right and only way, and that everyone must believe the way we do. This is ethnocentric, and it's typical of the mythic level of consciousness. So Marion says that people at this level of consciousness see themselves as good and unbelievers as evil. They seek to use the power of the state to impose their beliefs upon unbelievers. They believe that God is on their side and that they are charged with converting the entire world to their beliefs, even if they have to use force to do so. Any of this ringing a bell at all? He goes on to say that mythic believers see their self-worth, and this is important, see their self-worth solely in terms of compliance with the external materialistic roles and rules of their religion. So in other words, their self-concept, their very identity, their sense of self-worth is all wrapped up in their religious beliefs. And so when they have others about who offer a different way of looking at things or disregard their rules and morals, they feel very threatened. It's a threat to their very self-worth. It can feel like a threat to their very life. So for this reason, they feel that they have to convert everyone so that everyone thinks and behaves like them. Well, I find this a really fascinating portrayal of fundamentalism, because what it says is that fundamentalists, while they may come across as very strong, that actually they're very fragile. And it's very difficult or can be very challenging to know how to relate to people with a different point of view. It's almost like they can't bend that way. Well, we encounter this certainly in our world, in our society, certainly right here in coastal Virginia, where we know that there are people who are believing in a little different way. Maybe they still believe in this idea of the mythic God and all that that entails. In my own life, my former brother-in-law was someone I would put in this category. I loved him. I love him dearly. He's a lovely, beautiful soul. He's a born-again Southern Baptist. And he married, of all people, my sister. And I say that because my sister is a self-proclaimed atheist. So you can just imagine the dynamic of that marriage. So, what happened is a lot of tension around religion, but they got married and he was in a kind of a live and let live mode, but then as the marriage went on, he felt more and more compulsion to convert her. And actually my heart went out to him because he lived in fear that my sister was going to hell, and he loved her. And this was a very real fear for him. He could just barely stand it. If only she would convert, all would be well. It was very painful for both people, and even more painful in more recent years when one of their children has become transgender. And my former brother-in-law just can't go there. It's so different. It's so radically different to his worldview that he doesn't even know how to begin to relate. And very sadly, and I think even tragically, although I hold out hope it can change, he's basically disowned his son. And when I feel that, when I get with him, I don't see him very often, but when I get with him, I feel that I want to convince him to look at this differently. And what I found is that that approach doesn't work. The more important thing is to get over to the one who's being shunned and provide support there. But when I'm with my former brother-in-law, it's to really be in Christ consciousness and hold the space for an opening to occur, for a breakthrough, for an awareness, so there can be a reconciliation. Something to remember as we go about our lives and encounter people of different mind. It's when we try to get into, you know, well, let me just tell you how you ought to believe them. We're kind of playing by their rule book, aren't we? We're kind of doing the same sort of thing. So this idea of wanting to convert people or feeling like we have a compulsion, we have a responsibility to convert people, especially if it's to the mythic concept of God, it's becoming obsolete. More and more people are not buying that. And that you can really see why. This idea of a sky God who's making things happen in kind of a capricious way, that we're being judged and all of that. Well, if you think about how those ideas originated thousands of years ago, it was really because people couldn't explain stuff, right? I mean, it's like that book, How the Tiger Got His Stripes. Like, you know, they sort of make up stories about, well, we're having a hurricane now because we did something we shouldn't have done, or God is punishing us. Well, in the last 500 years, there have been so many scientific discoveries that have really explained a lot. So we no longer have to rely on the mystery of God or the arbitrariness of a God to kind of figure out how we're supposed to relate to life. And so you can look at the long list. I mean, it's really quite amazing. Galileo supporting Copernicus and saying that the earth is not the center of the universe and that the stars are not set in the sky in a vault with the heaven on the other side of it. that there's no physical hell down in the earth. And then we have Isaac Newton and all his laws, all the scientific laws about how things work and why balls drop and who knows all that stuff that he taught, but he explained a lot. And then, of course, we have Charles Darwin, who began advancing the idea of evolution. And that kind of blew the Garden of Eden story right out of the water, right there. And even Sigmund Freud, who delved into psychoanalysis and the workings of the human psyche, put out this awareness that when people behave negatively, it's not because the devil made them do it, it's because there are some neuroses there. There's something that's happened. And then we have Adam Smith and Karl Marx explaining how the economy works. Just a lot of things have gotten clearer. And even today, scientific discovery around quantum theory moves us even further into kind of understanding how things may work. And at every step, it implies a shifting concept of God. And at the same time, as all these scientific discoveries, there's been a lot of biblical scholarship, right? So we've had the discovery of the Nag Hammadi Library and the Dead Sea Scrolls and tons of archaeological work and finding, okay, who wrote the Bible? When did they write the Bible? Why did they write the Bible? What was behind all this? Who was Jesus really? Tremendous amount of biblical research and scholarship coming forward. Well, when you put all this together, the scientific discoveries as well as the theological findings, more and more people are saying that mythic God, that just doesn't make sense. I just can't get that. I don't buy that. And at the same time, they're fleeing church because they associate that with church. And for a long time, it was church. And in some places, it still is church. But they would flee that, and I know I've mentioned it before, that the fastest growing segment in the religious landscape is the unchurched. And so people have said, not going there. Shunning organized religion, going off and seeking a concept of God that makes sense to them. And many of us are in that category, are we not? Exploring together. So what happens is we have those still in the mythic level consciousness, and we have this increasing rush towards something else, something that's evolving, something still a little bit mysterious, but yet at the same time pulling us forward. We see more and more of a split in our society, and so we see these issues coming up that are ideological issues that trigger the same difference of opinion between the mythical and the more rational or even beyond in higher levels of consciousness. Issues like gay rights, abortion, stem cell research, the environment, healthcare, whatever it is. People who are in the mythic level, boom, that triggers their worldview, and then we have others who see it differently, and so there is this sharp divide. And Jim Marion says that all these issues are rooted in the same spiritual crisis. It's a clash between people whose consciousness is stuck at the mythic level and those whose consciousness has moved beyond the mythic to rational consciousness and even higher. Does this resonate for you? We experience this. You see it in the news, you hear about it in politics and all of that. So what are we to do? Well, we can ask ourselves, what would Jesus do? Always a great question. Because I believe what Jesus would do, if we look into that, it's really quite fascinating. Because the God of Jesus was not the mythic God. The God of Jesus was God within. The God of Jesus was not someone separate from us, but someone that we are one with. The God of Jesus was not vindictive or judgmental or punishing, but rather a God of love. The God of Jesus was not confined only to one religion, but it was a state of being, not a God of law, but a God of being that was accessible for many different paths. You know, truly, if we go back, and I love doing this, if we go back and we look at what Jesus was trying to tell us, the concept of God he was trying to impart to us, I think we are only just now beginning to get it, just now beginning to glimpse what he felt and knew and lived in. So he was showing us and trying to teach to us and demonstrate God as an experiential reality. God is within, and it is a state of consciousness that we feel deep within our being. What a radically, truly radically different view from what was believed at the time. And he was actually very outspoken in rejecting the old rules and roles and the institutions and all those trappings of the mythic level of understanding. He wanted us to discover this grace, this consciousness, this sense of oneness with the divine and each other, that when we're in that place, we can manifest heaven on earth. Ooh, we can manifest heaven on earth. Absolutely stunning. This is what we are being called to. But you know, he is of such a high level of consciousness, not only is it challenging for us to get it, but just imagine how it was for his followers. And we've often postulated that was a little frustrating for Jesus, like these people just aren't getting it. I keep saying it, they're not getting it, right? They were sort of stuck. And so what we can learn from that, a couple things. One is that there's more for us to advance into. And the other is to realize that sometimes people are just stuck. They are just stuck. And no amount of talking, convincing, arguing, whatever it is going to necessarily move them. And what we see is that Jesus preached a God of unconditional love, but then along came the Apostle Paul. Must have been very tied to his old beliefs and the old system, because, by golly, pretty soon he reintroduced the idea of a God who has to be appeased. And by 150 of the Common Era, the Christian thought, the interpretation of Jesus' teachings had regressed back to the mythic level of the common population of the Roman Empire. There you have it. So there's a really beautiful framework of look how we look at the evolution of spirituality, because that's really what we're talking about here. It's not just the evolution of how we think about God. This is the evolution of spirituality, which is a continuum. And so there was this fellow, his name is Joachim, and he was a 12th century abbot in Italy. And he offered up this beautiful analogy. He said that history could be divided into three periods corresponding to the three parts of the Trinity. So the first period in history was the age of the Father, and he thinks of this as the Old Testament. And the next period was the age of the Son, and this was the arrival of Jesus and his ministry and the church. And then the third is the age of Spirit, the age of Holy Spirit. And this is where we are entering into. This is where we are longing to live and practice our spirituality. He says that eventually the age of the Spirit prophesied by Jesus is coming, when people will no longer worship God in temples, but in spirit and truth. People would then follow their own inner lights to God, and there would be a great flourishing of mysticism. 12th century, pretty cool, huh? A flourishing of mysticism, a sense of God as an experiential reality, the age of spirit, the dawning of the age of spirit. Well, we hear this and we may think, this is terrific. I would love to have this Christ consciousness. I would love to live in this. Can we just make that happen like right now? How can I make that happen as quickly as possible? But the fact is, it's a process, right? It's a journey. We're on this journey together. And we realize, and this is a really key point, that every step of the evolution of spirituality is necessary and productive. That each step, the mythic consciousness, whatever it is, it moves us forward. It's a part of the whole. It is to be appreciated, and the strengths from that taken and incorporated into where we go from here. So the paradigm we talk about is transcend and include in the evolution of consciousness. So we include the best of what came before, We move up to a higher, more transcendent level of consciousness, and we continue on. This is so important because for me, being honest here, there are times when I get with people who I would say are maybe at a little different place in their consciousness, it can be very tempting to feel superior. We've got this. You're so off. You know, when are you going to wake up? When are you going to, you know, all that. Well, it's human. We do it. But that's not productive. That's not what we're meant to do. That's not how we live in Christ consciousness. Because the reality is we start judging and labeling and we're just playing the same game, right? So rather to be able to hold the sacred space for someone who thinks differently from you and to see that loving, beautiful light in them, affirm the highest and best in them coming forth, and then we each do our work. And oh, by the way, we have plenty of work to do ourselves, right? And we might like to point at others and say, well, if only you would change. Oh, if only you would do your work. We have our own work to do. So the level of consciousness that's typically described right now in spiral dynamics is called green consciousness, which probably doesn't mean too much to you, but green consciousness is basically social consciousness. It's about peace and love. It's about, you know, we want everybody to be heard. We want everybody to be included. We, you know, we're all about love here and everybody having a voice and really kind of born of the 60s era and, you know, all that, Woodstock, etc. So this is kind of the green consciousness, and many of us in Unity kind of can resonate with that, and certainly the cultural creatives and the spiritual seekers tend to be of that ilk. So this is one in this book that hit me right between the eyes. See if it has the same effect on you. Even spiritual progressives who are all about peace and love have some growing to do. And Marian points out that they often have love and compassion only for those who agree with them or those they label as victims. He writes, they often despise rednecks, Christian evangelicals, NASCAR races, hunting, professional wrestling, and rap. They are often pleased when institutions such as the ministry of a TV evangelist, the Boy Scouts, or the Catholic Church are scandalized and exposed. Did that strike a nerve with anybody? We're all evolving. God is evolving through us as us. And what I love about this learning, there's so many things. It's very humbling and it's also very motivating. It's motivating to realize that there's more for us to discover. It's humbling to realize that others have pieces of wisdom for us to glean. And there's a particular joy for me in realizing that Jesus as wayshower still has tremendous significance for my spiritual journey. That there is still something very golden and precious for me to experience through him and his teachings and to continue to aspire to that level of Christ consciousness. Jim Marion says, we'll eventually reach a point where everyone has the same consciousness that Jesus had. Isn't that a wonderful thought? It's a beautiful, beautiful thought, and I would expect that's when we feel the manifestation of heaven here on earth. And what we may find is when we reach that level, when we are in that beautiful place of oneness with the divine, when we feel the presence of God in us, when we know that we are one, that actually we will have this sense of completion and a sense as if we've come home. We've come home to who we truly are. And we may find in that place that all religious affiliation just drops by the wayside. Truly, if you've ever had a profound mystical experience or even just a little mystical experience, you know that when you're in that God consciousness, there's no sense of whether God is Lutheran or Methodist or Catholic or Buddhist or Jew or anything else, nor are you. You're just the essence of spirit connecting with spirit. Gandhi used to say, I belong to all religions. I hold that vision for all of us as well. There's so much for us to do in realizing our gifts to give and the global imperative, truly the global urgent imperative, to love one another. Let's move now to our time of meditation. I invite you to take a deep breath in and then let it go. And as you do, just feel the energy of God, the energy of Spirit moving through you. On this very essential level, we're all made of the same stuff. We're all part of the same essence of life. Let's take another deep breath in and just relax into this knowing. Relax into this truth that there is room for all of us here on planet Earth. And we're all doing the best we can wherever we are. Allow yourself to sink a little bit more deeply into the presence of God within you. Feel the peace that passes all understanding. That sweet sense of love and oneness. Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven is within you. And when we find this sweet presence in us, we know that's God. We breathe gently into this sacred time. Let go of worries or concerns. Let go and let God in the silence. We give thanks for this sweet essence of life, this beautiful energy that unites us, this unnameable something that we call God. We may not know how to define it, but we know that it's here. We know that's the truth of who we are and all of creation. We give thanks for the many, many beautiful ways that God manifests in our world, the differences, the diversity, even the differences of opinion, knowing this is all part of our journey into Christ consciousness. For the blessing of being alive at this time and place, learning from one another, and learning from our way-shower, Jesus the Christ. We're so grateful. Thank you, God.